Hi everyone, this is Ian and this is the October edition of the Angus Talking Newspaper, otherwise known as the Angus Newshound. This edition starts with selections from the Angus County Press of the 25th of September, read by Gwen. Then Leslie reads from the edition of the 2nd of October, followed by Fiona reading from the most recent edition, that of the 9th of October, including an important article about the winter heating allowance. At the end, there is an extra article from the Talking News Federation in which our regular contributor, Liz from East Kilbride, tells the amazing story of Lucille Ball, a hugely popular and successful TV star, whom I'm sure some of us can remember. I hope that you find this article and all the news from around Angus interesting, and I finish with my usual appeal to all of you. Please be sure to return the yellow pochette you received this recording in, along with the USB stick, if that is how you listen to it. If you receive the CD, there's no need to return it, but please do return the pochette. All you need to do is reverse the label on the pochette and get it posted. There's no need for a stamp. Next month, Stacey will be introducing the recording, and I will be back in December, so till then, goodbye and have a very unscary Halloween. Now here is Gwen with her selection of news from back in September, starting with the latest on the proposed giant pylons between Kintore and Tully.
Gwen McIntosh here, reading from Angus County Press, dated Thursday, 25th September 2025. Vision Within a Year by Mark Dowie. SSEN Transmission has now submitted a Section 37 consent application to the Scottish Government for a key component of its £22 billion pathway to 2030 investment programme. The application relates to the proposed 400,000-volt overhead line between Kintore and Teeling, with the submission marking the culmination of a detailed development process which SSEN has said involved carrying out one of the biggest public consultation exercises the north of Scotland has ever seen. The process involved 40 consultation events and public meetings to help inform the development of the new proposed overhead line, which also includes two new substations at Fitheres O'Forest Hurley and Teeling. This led to significant changes to proposals, including overhead line alignments. Over the course of the investment programme, SSEN expects to invest at least £22 billion up to March 2031. The project need has been independently assessed and approved by the National Energy System Operator, NESO, and Energy Regulator, Ofgem. Ministers are now expected to determine the application within 12 months, in line with the Scottish Government's new 52-week determination process for priority applications for electricity transmission infrastructure. During the determination period, SSEN Transmission will continue to undertake survey work along the route to gain a further understanding of ground and environmental conditions. Associated projects are the reconductoring of existing overhead lines between Aileth in Perth and Kinross and Teeling, and between Teeling and Westfield in Fife, to upgrade them from 275,000 volts to operate at 400,000 volts. The Section 37 application is now available to view on the Scottish Government's Energy Consents Unit website. A hard copy of the Environmental Impact Assessment and supporting documents that form part of the application is also available at Angus House in Forfar, at Fintry Library, Fintry Dundee, Mearns Community Library, Aberdeen Road, Lawrence Kirk, and Stonehaven Library, Evans Street, Stonehaven. Alison Hall, Director of Development for SSEN Transmission, said, "Submitting our consent application for the Kintore-Teeling 400,000-volt overhead line marks a major milestone in supporting UK and Scottish energy goals. This project will unlock vital low-carbon electricity and strengthen the security and affordability of our energy system. Upgrading the transmission network also drives jobs and economic growth, with lasting benefits for local communities through housing and community benefit funding. We're grateful to all stakeholders who contributed to one of the most extensive public consultations in the north of Scotland, helping shape our proposals. We now await the Scottish Government's timely decision under its new 52-week process for priority energy infrastructure. The ECU is notifying consultation bodies of the timeline and process for them to submit their responses to the application. This separate public consultation period runs until Monday, October 27, 2025. Any representations may be submitted by email to the Scottish Government via representations@gov.scot or by post to the Scottish Government Energy Consents Unit, 4th floor, 5 Atlantic Quay, 150 Broomie Law, Glasgow, G28LU. £2.3 million housing project agreed by Liam Rutherford. A £2.3 million housing plan for the former Kinloch Primary School site in Carnoustie has been approved by councillors. The planning application to erect 11 homes on vacant land on the corner of Dundee Street and Lynx Avenue was discussed at a recent development standards meeting. Under the approved plans, 8 one-bed flats, bookended by 2 one-bedroom bungalows, will be built. A further two-bedroom bungalow is also proposed to the northwest of the site. Kinloch Primary closed in 2006 as part of a reorganisation of local schools. The building was then demolished in 2010 and the site has sat empty since. However, the housing proposals drew a raft of objections. A total of 44 letters of representation were lodged, 41 of which were against the plans, including Carnoustie Community Council. Key concerns included the loss of existing and well-used community space, as well as more pressure on local services and facilities, and increased traffic and pressure on parking. Councillors voted unanimously to approve the plans. Councillor Linda Clark said, "We have over 40 people in objection, and we can't ignore that, but I'm also very aware of the need for housing." Councillor Bill Duff added, "The community use seems a little ad hoc. I think we have conflicting priorities and finding homes for people trumps occasional farmers' markets." Full documents for applications can be searched for and viewed via public notice portal /publicnoticeportal.uk or Angus Council's website. Bridge of Dun has reopened following Storm Babbitt. Angus Provost Craig Fotheringham, Communities Convener Councillor Tommy Stewart and elected members from the Montrose area attended the official reopening of the Bridge of Dun following nearly 2 years of extensive rebuild works. The A-listed Bridge of Dun near Montrose dates back to the 18th century. A design by architect Alexander Stevens to carry a minor road over the River South Esk. The bridge was and continues to be a key link for local communities. In October 2023, during Storm Babbitt, the bridge was badly damaged with a partial collapse of the South Relief Arch and significant scour to the North Relief Arch. Emergency underpinning was undertaken immediately to protect the North Arch. However, the bridge remained closed due to the collapsed South Arch, and while emergency work was carried out in other areas of Angus. By March 2024, after careful consideration, the partially collapsed sections of the bridge were laser scanned, then carefully taken down prior to rebuilding work beginning. The rebuild work was funded by the Belwyn scheme. The contractor JML Contracts, based in Perthshire, was appointed to carry out extensive work to sympathetically restore the bridge to its original appearance, reusing as much of the original stone as possible. Following detailed ground investigation, significant works were undertaken to ensure that the rebuilt arch would have a solid foundation and also allowed the eastern face of the arch to be retained. East Haven Take Gold by John A. McInnes. Once again, the East Haven community has secured a Gold Award for Coastal Village Trophy and the Jim Murdy Award for Sustainability. In 2024, East Haven Together was selected by Keep Scotland Beautiful as the winner of the Scottish level of the Gardening for Wildlife Award, one of five new RHS community awards. The group was then put forward to the UK level and won the overall 2024 RHS Gardening for Wildlife Award. East Haven Together works in close partnership with Keep Scotland Beautiful and other partners to improve the natural environment, protect wildlife, and make East Haven an attractive place to live and visit. They take responsibility for maintaining the entire amenity, including community gardens, public toilets, dunes, beach, and NCN1. They use the Beautiful Scotland three-pillar framework of horticulture, environment, and community to help prioritise activities and align themselves to global sustainable goals. East Haven is one of the earliest recorded fishing communities in Scotland, dating back to 1214. Group supports locals. In conjunction with the World Prevention Suicide Day 2025, an informal meeting was held at the Angus Mental Health charity Reach Across. Mary Stewart gave a welcome address, followed by an informative video documentary on those affected by suicide. The Reach Across chair, Sandra Ramsey, gave a talk on how much a mental health charity is required and how, with the help of a close friend, she set up the Reach Across charity after her son Ross took his own life back in 2013. The charity is self-funded and operates with dedicated and trained volunteers. They recently gathered to promote discussion around suicide and ways to help those struggling with depression. Reach Across has regular groups like a walking club, art group, and a men's club, etc. See their Facebook page for contact details. Carers Cash Available by John A. McInnes. Student carers in Dundee and Angus urged not to miss out on vital financial support. As thousands of students begin their college or university studies, those with caring roles are being urged to check they're getting all the financial help they're entitled to. Around 30,000 unpaid carers are currently studying at Scottish colleges and universities, according to Carers Trust Scotland. These students face unique challenges, providing emotional, mental or physical support to family members, friends or neighbours whilst juggling lectures, coursework and student life. However, support is available. Social Security Scotland delivers three payments that could make a real difference to student carers in Dundee and Angus. Carer support payment provides £83.30 per week and is available to many students in education, including those studying full-time. Carers Allowance Supplement provides additional support in Scotland for those who receive carer support payment. Young Carer Grant offers an annual payment of £390.25 to carers aged 16 to 18. Eligibility depends on factors including the number of hours spent caring, the type of course being studied, and whether the person being cared for receives a disability benefit. Research shows that student carers are four times more likely to drop out of their studies than other students. Financial difficulties are cited as being a major contributing factor alongside time constraints. That's where payments for carers can help ease some of the pressures faced. Montrose Pottery. A Montrose-based pottery and creative arts studio has invested in new equipment to expand its classes and improve production after securing £4,500 in grant funding from Angus Council, thanks to support from Business Gateway. Playhalf offers a dedicated space for pottery enthusiasts and creative minds in the heart of Montrose town centre. Owner Irene Hughes began teaching ceramics in 2016 at Springfield Creative Arts in Arbroath, after being invited to assist with weekly classes. The experience deepened her passion for the craft and for helping others discover the joy of working with clay. After years of honing her skills, she fulfilled a long-held ambition to bring art and creativity closer to home, launching the Clay Half in October 2022. Inspired by Montrose's history, the studio takes its name from Old Town maps, where the western side of the main street was called the Clay Half. For Irene, a former cartographic and planning technician, it was the perfect link between pottery and mapping. Housed in the former Blue Door Gallery, the space has been transformed into a mixed-use creative hub that offers a range of small, welcoming classes in pottery, painting, drawing, printmaking, and more, adding to the area's growing creative movement and fostering connection and collaboration. With guidance from Business Gateway advisor Kate Clark and Invest in Angus, Irene successfully applied to the Angus Council SME Start and Grow Business Grant Scheme, funded by the UK's Shared Prosperity Fund. The funding was used to purchase an 80-litre ceramic kiln and a new potter's wheel, both of which are already making a transformative difference to the studio's operations. The increased capacity has already allowed Irene to introduce specialised children's classes and holiday sessions, as well as trial a Friday afternoon mud club for teenagers. To find out more about how Business Gateway can help your business, visit www.bgateway.com. NHS Tayside is reducing waste. NHS Tayside is reducing food waste and improving recycling across its sites, exceeding key Scottish Government waste reduction targets. NHS Tayside has reduced its general waste by an impressive 56%, surpassing the national target of 15%. No general waste is sent to landfill, helping protect the environment for future generations. The dedication of the catering team has seen food waste cut by 47%, exceeding the national target of 33%. To support further improvement, NHS Tayside is committed to ensuring that 70% of domestic waste is recycled or composted by 2025. Communal waste stations have been introduced in non-clinical areas. These stations encourage better waste segregation and recycling, and many teams have removed personal waste bins to support the initiative. Recycling bins are in place across NHS Tayside to help staff, patients and visitors to make the right choice at the point of disposal. The introduction of Green Champions has helped promote sustainability in many departments. These champions are from many different areas and services across NHS Tayside. They are helping to embed good environmental practices into everyday work and deliver the ambition of reaching net zero. NHS Tayside Chief Executive Nikki Connor said, "I am incredibly proud of the progress NHS Tayside has made in reducing waste and protecting our environment. These achievements reflect the dedication of our staff and our commitment to sustainability. We know there is more to do, and we will continue to support our teams with the tools and information they need to make a difference." Stone under repair. Aberlemno 3, one of four Pictish stones from the village of Aberlemno in Angus, is undergoing conservation work in Edinburgh after it fell during a storm earlier this year. A towering 2.82 metre tall and weighing in at 1.8 tonnes, it took a significant operation to secure and safely move the stone so it could be removed for further inspection and analysis. The stone has now been undergoing condition assessment by Historic Environment Scotland's expert stone conservators to investigate the damage and identify what next steps will be required to conserve it. Conservators have made the exciting discovery of a small portion of previously unseen carvings, which had been protected over the centuries within the collar stone which encircles the base of the monument. The detail of these newly revealed carvings is very similar to the fretwork, the intricate decorative pattern which features on the main panel of the stone. The clarity and condition of these carvings suggest they have only been exposed for around 100 to 150 years. Alongside this intriguing find, the team has been undertaking tactile inspection and acoustic survey to identify any fragile areas of the stone which will require consolidation work, which will then allow the stone to be turned and its opposite face to be condition checked. Conservators have also carefully steam cleaned the stone to remove any unwanted vegetation and biological growth. Stove Industry Association hits back. Following our report in Angus County Press last week that Angus Council were to consider a ban on wood burners, the Stove Industry Association has responded to the proposals. The Stove Industry Association is disappointed by Angus Council's decision to prohibit the use of wood-burning stoves in its housing stock. While we share the Council's ambition to provide environmentally responsible heating for tenants, this policy is short-sighted and risks overlooking the significant progress made in stove technology in recent years. Modern eco-design compliant stoves are designed to reduce emissions by up to 90% compared with an open fire and up to 80% compared with older stoves, while offering households a renewable, affordable, and resilient source of secondary heating. Crucially, these stoves use wood fuel, an abundant local resource in Scotland that is both renewable and sustainable. Nothing could be more environmentally responsible than supporting households to heat their homes with a locally sourced renewable fuel. The Department for Energy Security and Net Zero has highlighted the ongoing importance of secondary heating, particularly for off-grid and hard-to-heat homes and for vulnerable households who are at risk from cold conditions and high energy costs. Removing stoves altogether takes away a valuable tool for household resilience. A more balanced approach would have been to support residents in using appliances correctly and to replace older stoves with low emission and high efficiency models, aligning with the Council's environmental objectives. Distillery launches its first whisky release by John A. McInnes. The Bothy Distillery, one of Scotland's most remote distilleries, has marked a major milestone with the unveiling of its inaugural bottling, a hand-selected 12-year-old Aberlour single malt Scotch whisky, forming the first release in the distillery's private cask collection. The whisky was revealed by the Bothy Distillery team on Thursday, September 11th, at an exclusive event in Edinburgh, hosted by founder Kim Cameron and master blender Ron Welsh. Matured in a bourbon hogshead and bottled at 56.1% ABV, the Aberlour single malt has been chosen not only for its flavour profile, but its signature character. Master blender Ron Welsh, who led the first tasting of the whisky, said, "This malt reflects the qualities we want to embody: balance, depth, and character. It's also an unusual cask from a distillery famed for sherry wood, making it highly collectible and unique." The inaugural bottling is limited to 327 individually numbered bottles, each priced at £98, and available exclusively from the Bothy Distillery. The launch marks the first chapter of a bigger vision. The Bothy Distillery is set to open in late 2025, bringing legal distilling back to Glen Prosen.
Hello, this is Leslie reading from the Angus County Press of Thursday, October the 2nd. On the front page, picture is of Angus House in Orchard Bank Forfar. Council HQ still for sale. Angus Council's bid to cut spending has been hit by a failure so far to sell its Forfar headquarters more than a year after being put on the market. The local authority has put Angus House at Orchard Bank Business Park up for sale with the aim of saving around £400,000 every year, the annual cost of running the offices. Since home and hybrid working became more the norm during and after the pandemic in 2020, almost half of the 4,518 square metre three-storey building has not been used. In August last year, for sale signs went up as part of an 18-month 6,500 marketing campaign. The council also said that the option was also open for anyone interested in taking on the building to lease all or part of it. But so far, no potential buyers seem to be on the horizon. And the local authority's finances officers have warned that the savings which the plan aimed to make will fall short of projected targets this year. Since 2018, £39 million has been cut from council spending. And we move to councillor on award shortlist. Angus councillor Lois Speed has been shortlisted for community champion in this year's LGIU and CCLA council awards. Miss Speed, member of Arbroath East and Lunan, is one of 40 local councillors from across England, Wales and Scotland to be shortlisted for the only national award ceremony dedicated to celebrating the extraordinary work of councillors. Now in their 16th year in England and 8th year in Scotland, the councillor awards highlight the vital contribution of councillors, often the unsung heroes of local democracy, from championing residents' interests to leading innovations in public services. Councillors play a crucial role in shaping communities and improving lives, and they do so while giving up their time and energy for what is often a voluntary, unpaid role. Society investigates the mystery of the universe. At its next meeting, the Montrose Natural History and Antiquarian Society will hold its annual general meeting, which will be followed by a presentation by Alan Rooney, FRAS, entitled Mapping the Unseen Universe. He will describe how using both the light we see and the measuring effects of invisible dark matter and dark energy help us to model the large-scale structure of the universe. Alan is a keen amateur astronomer and is a member of the Aberdeen Astronomical Society, as well as a fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society. Hand Cycle Challenge. Radio and television star Grado will be in Montrose next week on the first leg of a 400-kilometre challenge to raise funds for national charity Make Some Noise. The Heart Scotland Breakfast is taking on the Granite to Glasgow Hand Cycle Challenge from Aberdeen to Glasgow, using nothing but his arms. He will leave the Granite City on Monday, October the 6th, arrive in Montrose later that day. He will continue the journey on Tuesday from Montrose to Perth. His challenge is due to end at the Heart Scotland Broadcast Centre in Glasgow on Friday, October the 10th, Make Some Noise Day. Grado, who joins Scotland's Heart Breakfast show in August alongside Des Clark and Adele Cunningham, is taking on the challenge for the organisation which is Heart's official charity. Make Some Noise changes lives across the UK by funding vital projects delivered by small charities, tackling issues such as mental health, disability, poverty and homelessness. Award for Manager. An Angus site manager has been recognised among Scotland's best for their dedication in raising standards in house building. Duncan Moon of Guild Homes Tayside Limited was named as regional winner for the small builder category at this year's Pride in the Job Awards. The award was presented for his work at Dalhousie Park in Edsall. Organised by the National House Building Council, the Pride in the Job Awards are now in their 45th year and widely considered to be the Oscars of the house building industry. Mr. Moon will now go forward to compete for the ultimate prize in house building, the Pride in the Job Supreme Awards. And there's a picture of him and other fellow award winners in the paper as well. Next items from Arbroath. The most recent Arbroath Probus Club meeting at the British Legion delved into the past, present and future of the town's abbey, when Nicola Livingston, chairperson of the Friends of Arbroath Abbey, gave a detailed, well-presented talk. The Friends of Arbroath Abbey promote the importance of the abbey within the history of Scotland for the betterment of the community and town of Arbroath. Some of their recent activities have included a torchlight procession from the Signal Tower to the abbey, Easter egg hunt and the very well-supported April the 6th Declaration Day Family Fun Day in the abbey grounds. Kirry site proposal. J&D Wilkie plans to knock down the Gairy Works on Belly's Brae in a major redevelopment of the 156-year-old textile site. And they say the Gairy scheme is the outcome of a community consultation over the future of the unsafe factory buildings. More than a decade ago, the Gairy factory was at the centre of a Kirriemuir supermarket war between rival developers, with an alternative site at Path Head which was approved. However, neither store materialised. The company is a world leader in industrial materials and technical textiles, employing around 180 staff in Angus. In June, it announced the acquisition of a factory in Massachusetts to help grow the key US market. But production in much of the original Kirri factory has long since ceased. The firm says major storms have caused areas of collapse and left them unsafe, and they want to bring down the dilapidated parts of the site. In its place, they would build five small units which would be used for retail offices or gallery space, and a larger new build unit is also planned for retail or storage stroke manufacturing for the firm. The lower part of the site beside the Gairy Burn is a SEPA flood risk area, and there are plans to create more town car parking there opposite the council's car park with EV charging bays. The company says it would have added the benefit of taking their delivery vehicles and other traffic away from the town centre. Popular group returns to club. This Sunday, October the 5th, Arbroath Accordion and Fiddle Club will welcome back the Occasionals as guest artist. The Occasionals, led by the accordionist Freeland Barber, have been entertaining audiences across Scotland and further afield for many years, and the club guests are sure to be well entertained by this group of excellent musicians. Anyone interested in fiddle music, accordion music or live music in general is welcome to attend. The doors of the Meadowbank Inn will open at 1 p.m. with the music starting at 1:30. The club would particularly like to welcome younger players of the accordion and fiddle, giving them an opportunity to hear live traditional music and an opportunity to play. Rose Designs Forum's logo. A Ferryden school pupil has designed the new face of Montrose's Fair Trade Forum after a competition supported by Mid Scott. The judges felt that Rose Duncan's new logo captures the meaningful connection between producer and consumer across the miles, encapsulating the spirit of fair trade in a fresh and inspiring way. Rose's designs will now become the new face of fair trade in Montrose, appearing prominently across the forum's promotional materials. The winning entry was praised for its vibrant storytelling and its heartfelt symbolism of fairness, sustainability and community cohesion. The announcement comes during Fair Trade Fortnight, a nationwide celebration that highlights farmers and workers and promotes sustainability and fights for fairer trade. Rose and her school received prizes from Mid Scott, including vouchers, a bag and framed prints of the winning design. And there's a lovely picture of a group of them with Rose in the middle. Goosefest welcomes annual arrivers. The Scottish Wildlife Trust inaugural Goosefest got underway this week at Montrose Basin. Running until Sunday, October the 12th, the event marks one of the basin's most breathtaking annual occurrences, the arrival of thousands of pink-footed geese on their annual migration from Iceland. It will also celebrate 30 years of the Montrose Basin Visitor Centre. Seeing the first skeins of geese flying overhead is a significant moment in nature's calendar and a sure sign of autumn's arrival. And the festival will feature a packed schedule of events, from family activities at the visitor centre on Rossi Braes to a chance to take to the basin on a rowing boat. There'll be something for everyone. And there's a picture of the geese in full flight here, and they look stunning. Conservation of stone underway. Conservation is now underway on a unique Pictish carved stone which was badly damaged during high winds earlier this year. The Abolemno III stone, which dates to the 9th century, stood by the roadside in the village in what some believe was its original position. One of four Pictish stones around the village, Historic Environment Scotland, HES, mounted a significant operation to secure and safely move the 2.82 millimetre tall stone after it was completely shattered from the base, with damage to some of the carvings after being bowed over in March. Weighing in at about 1.8 tonnes, it was removed for further inspection and analysis and is now undergoing painstaking conditioning assessment by HES's expert stone conservators to investigate the damage and identify what next steps will be required to conserve it. The stone's removal, however, has revealed an exciting discovery of a small portion of previously unseen carvings, which had been protected over the centuries within the collar stone, which encircled the base of the monument. Their detail is very similar to the stone's main intricate decorative pattern, and their clarity and condition suggest they have only been exposed for about 100 to 150 years. The team has been undertaking tactile inspection and acoustic survey to identify any fragile areas requiring consolidation work, which will then allow the stone to be returned and its opposite face to be condition checked. It also has been carefully steam cleaned to remove vegetation and biological growth. Repair work will require to reattach the upper section, a triangular piece of the monument which has broken along a pre-existing and previously identified crack, which has been treated to try to limit the impact of weathering. And there's a picture of them working on the stone here in their workshop. Club hears of enthusiasm for cycling. President Nick Smith presided at Carnoustie's Probus Club recent meeting and introduced new member Hugh Wiley as guest speaker. Hugh had been invited to speak about the Veteran Cycling Club, of which he was a member. As a result, he attended a meeting to find out about the club, and he enjoyed his visit so much he became a fully paid up member. The Veteran Cycling Club has 2,500 members worldwide and promotes riding and conservation of older cycles. During his talk, he referred to Vic Polanski, Scottish-born, who is famous in cycling history and was awarded the Polish equivalent of the Military Cross. He lived to an age of 102. Hugh also spoke about cycles from the early days of this form of transport, and in particular two very old cycles found locally, and the Veteran Cycling Club event called the Lamplight Run that features the different forms of lights of cycles of the very early history of cycling. Brychin bee beds bring beautiful benefits. An initiative which helps to give pollinators and insects a helping hand and give Brychin a vibrant splash of colour has returned to the town for the second year. Volunteers from SSEN Transmission and Balfour Beatty teamed up again to plant pollinator-friendly flower beds known as bee beds to support local wildlife and inspire environmental stewardship. The project saw 10 volunteers from SSEN teams work alongside biodiversity charity Bee Pollinate, Angus Council and a lively class of 20 pupils from Mason Dew Primary School. The group planted over 600 plants on special beds set up at Westwood, including a rich mix of native wildflowers and perennial garden plants, designed to attract and nourish a wide range of pollinators, from bees and butterflies to hoverflies and birds. The planting event builds on the success of last year's bee beds in Edsel and Brychin, which were created as part of an SSEN Transmission East Coast project. This year's effort continues the partnership with Repollinate, whose Beds for Bees initiative help communities establish nectar-rich habitats to support pollinators facing threats from habitat loss, pesticides and climate change. Bob Wycock, Communication Liaison Manager SSEN, said, "We're proud to be back in Brechin for another year of bee bed planting. It's a fantastic way to engage with the community and promote biodiversity. Seeing the enthusiasm of the pupils from Maison Dieu Primary School was a real highlight. They are the next generation of environmental champions." Samurai armour put on display. A rare suit of samurai armour has gone on display in Montrose Museum as part of a new exhibition looking at Angus connections to colonialism. The armour, which was conserved using an award of £21,355 from the Angus Council Common Good Fund, will be on display until Monday, November the 3rd. This work, undertaken by Tula Pardo and Will Murray from the Scottish Conservancy Studio, is part of a wider project begun in January last year. The collection and research is highlighted in Perspectives, Collecting the World, which is the result of work by Angus Alive to decolonise the collections and examine the legacies of colonialism. This armour comprises layered plates designed to protect the wearer while allowing for flexibility of movement. It was found to be in an advanced state of deterioration and, due to the complexity of the work required, was not able to be displayed when the exhibition launched in August. Conservators have used moisture to strengthen and relax the damaged areas of the blue and brown silk fabric, cut dyed net to fit over the damaged areas of the silk and sewed it in place for protection. The mail was also sewn into its original position and repaired. Emma Gilliard, Angus Alive Museums and Galleries collection lead, said, "We're very grateful to Angus Council Common Good for this funding award, which enables us to conserve this special object and display it to the safety of visitors. The armour will also be on display for the exhibition's full run at Forfar's Methven Museum and Art Gallery from January 23rd to April 20th, 2026, along with more unseen objects."
Hello, Fiona here. Reading from Angus County Press, Thursday, October the 9th, 2025. 21 million funding bid failure. Angus SNP councillors have lost their bid to change how a 21 million infrastructure fund will be spent for a second time. The ambitious spending proposals were approved by councillors last month and includes repairs for roads, schools, heating systems and swimming pools. Plans to unlock the multi-million investment through the fund were initially revealed in the previous SNP-led administration's February budget. Their spending proposals added 1 million in the council's loan budget to unlock extra borrowing power for capital projects. However, the SNP group later lost control of the local authority in a no confidence vote. Now, the current coalition administration is following through on the plans. However, SNP group leader Bill Duff brought forward an emergency motion during a full Angus Council meeting, calling for the funding plans to be reconsidered at a future meeting. He said the multi-million pound plan approval had been rushed with little debate by elected members. Councillor Duff added, "We agreed £21 million worth of spending with no debate and no comment from elected members, and I think that's unacceptable. It's a large sum of money, second only to the budget, and elected members should be able to discuss and debate that." The administration's spending plans include £2 million for Montrose erosion and £3 million to raise Brechin's flood wall. However, Mr. Duff also expressed concerns that Montrose had been shortchanged under the proposals. He said, "I'm unhappy about the allocation of funding for the scheme. The issues here are quite urgent." We don't have a plan for Brechin, and without a plan, you can't assign the money. We have got a plan of sorts for coastal erosion in Montrose. We have got a timescale there, and I don't think we have allowed enough money for that project. These are serious matters and not matters to be taken lightly. However, Mr. Duff's motion was blocked by committee convener and Angus Provost, Craig Fotheringham. He said there were no considerations that warranted the plans to be reconsidered. Danish company chooses Montrose for production. Danish materials technology company Y-Mat Tech, A-S, has announced the port of Montrose as its preferred location for a DNV-certified grout production facility in the UK. The facility will supply the company's DNV-type approved structural grouts used in offshore wind turbine foundations directly into the UK market. This announcement marks a key milestone in Y-Mat Tech's exploration of UK-based manufacturing, which aims to strengthen the offshore wind supply chain by offering shorter delivery routes, cost efficiencies, and reduced shelf life risks during foundation installations. Montrose has positioned itself as a hub for the energy transition, while Y-Mat Tech brings deep expertise in grout, innovation and offshore wind project delivery, with the collaboration reflecting a shared ambition to support the UK's growing leadership in offshore wind. Y-Mat Tech's interest in the US and UK market has been supported by Scottish Development International with help to access inward investment. Tom Hutchison, Montrose Port Authority CEO, added, "Being selected as Y-Mat Tech's preferred location underlines our growing role in the offshore wind supply chain and our commitment to enabling the UK's energy transition." Polling place consultation. Angus Council is seeking public opinion regarding proposed changes to some of the county's 66 polling places. These range from schools and leisure centres to local community and church halls. But following the UK parliamentary election in 2024, a number of polling places have been identified as unavailable or no longer suitable. The following amendments to the current polling scheme have been recommended by the returning officer. Airlie Primary School instead of Airlie Hall. Tannadice Primary School instead of Tannadice Church Extension. Tannadice Primary School instead of Old School Oathlaw. Canoosti Sports Centre instead of Philip Hall. Arbroath Sports Centre instead of Arbuthnot Church Hall. Monifieth Activity Centre instead of Gerard Hall. Any Angus elector may make submissions about these proposals up to 5 p.m. on Friday, November the 7th. Further details and information on how to submit views can be found at engage.angus.gov.uk/polling-places. Payment reminder. Angus residents of state pension age are being reminded that they will receive pension age winter heating payment from Social Security Scotland this winter. Pension age winter heating payment has replaced the winter fuel payment for people in Scotland. Most people will receive the payment automatically. The payment of between £101.70 and £305.10 will be made to most eligible people from November. It will be paid into the same bank account as their state pension or Social Security Scotland benefit. According to the National Records of Scotland, there are around 28,000 people of pensionable age in Angus. To be eligible, residents must have been born on or before 21st September 21, 1959, and live in Scotland during the qualifying week of September 15 to 21, 2025. The payment amount depends on age, household circumstances, and whether certain benefits are received. It is estimated that over 1 million pensioners will receive pension age winter heating payment. However, around 169,000 will have it recovered through the tax system if they do not opt out. Pensioners with a taxable annual income over £35,000 will have the payment taken back through their tax code or self-assessment tax return by HMRC. Those in this position may choose to opt out of receiving the payment to avoid the tax recovery process. A small number of people may need to apply for the payment, including people who have deferred their state pension. David Wallace, Social Security Scotland Chief Executive, said, "This payment ensures pensioners receive vital support during the winter months. It's important to highlight that most people will receive this payment automatically." There is an eligibility checker online that can help residents find out if they will get the payment and how much they are likely to receive. Social Security Scotland will begin sending letters to everyone who will receive a payment from November. For more information and to access the online eligibility checker, visit mygov, that's mygov.scot/pension-heating. The online form for opting out is available until midday on October the 10th, which has passed. From October the 13th, people can opt out by contacting Social Security Scotland directly. Community centre to be put up for sale. Arbroath Community Centre has been put on the market after a lease deal for the building fell through. Earlier this year, councillors backed community interest company Shape Wellbeing's plan to take over the building. The company had put forward ambitious proposals to develop facilities for the unused building, with plans including a VR studio, a paddleball court, and a skim simulator. However, a recent council report revealed that the company is no longer pursuing a lease of the centre. The building on Marketgate was one of four community facilities ditched by the council's leisure trust, Angus Alive, in a cost-cutting move back in 2023. While it has not been used as a community centre since 2020, it was given a new role as a COVID-19 vaccination hub. At a recent full council meeting, councillors agreed to declare the centre surplus to requirements and offer it for lease or sale. Arbroath West representative Martin Shepherd said, "I hope a sale will perhaps result in the building going back into the community and the building finds a future use. The last thing I want to see is a dilapidated community centre." Councillor Julie Bell added, "I would like to thank Shape for their work on this. I really liked their proposal for this initiative. While I'm sorry to see them depart, I wish them well for their onward journey." Defibrillator for football team. The Arbroath FC walking football team were recently presented with a new defibrillator. The gift of the potential life-saving equipment was organised by Martin Jack of Walking Football Scotland on behalf of Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland. The AFC Walking Football team meets every Wednesday evening on the sports fields of 45 Commando at RM Condor. Games are at walking pace instead of running and are designed to help people get fit or maintain an active lifestyle, no matter what their age and fitness, as well as support people getting back into football if they have given it up due to age or injury. The team is always on the lookout for more players, and details can be found at Arbroath FC Walking Football, all one word, Arbroath FC Walking Football .co.uk. Tour of Edinburgh Poppy Factory. Former serving Royal Marines, members and guests of the East of Scotland Royal Marines Association recently took a tour of the Lady Hague Poppy Factory in Edinburgh. The factory is the biggest veterans charity in Scotland and operated by veterans from various branches of the military, many of whom are disabled, who work in the factory making poppies, toys, wooden crosses and wreaths. This year alone, the factory produced 1.5 million poppies. The East of Scotland RMA enjoyed their visit and heard how the concept of the poppy factory was started by Lady Dorothy Hague, wife of Field Marshal the Earl Hague. Tours have become popular for members of the public and groups. These can be arranged by calling Kerry Crichton, the factory's head of learning, by telephoning 0131 550 1573. I'll repeat, 0131 550 1573. The search is on for the UK's most inspiring canine as entries are being sought for the Kennel Club Hero Dog Award 2026. Presented at Crofts and supported by the Kennel Club Charitable Trust, the annual award shines a spotlight on the nation's extraordinary dogs, from loyal companions to life-saving heroes who make a life-changing difference to those around them. Nominations can be submitted across five categories: extraordinary working dog, hero support dog, best friends, child's champion, and rescue dog hero. Five finalists will be chosen, each receiving a donation for their favourite dog charity. The overall winner, decided by a public vote, will be revealed live at Crofts 2026 and awarded £5,000 for their chosen cause. Now, the Kennel Club is calling on the public to help find the next hero dog. Nominations are open until October the 27th and can be made at crofts.org.uk/hero dog award. Finalists will be announced in early 2026 ahead of the grand finale at Crofts 2026 at the NEC Birmingham, March the 5th to the 8th. New company to tour small venues. A newly formed theatre company will embark on a mini tour of small theatres in Angus to bring a challenging new production to local audiences. Following a sell-out show at the Dundee Fringe, Gather Round Theatre has announced the tour of their award-winning play, Nay Good. across theatres in Forfa, Carnoustie and Arbroath. This tour is a significant milestone for the brand new company, which was established to fearlessly tackle mature themes while providing creative opportunities for more mature actors and theatre makers. Neigud was the winner of the Carol Tricker Playwriting Award in 2025. The one-act play competition was established by playwriting group Tearaway Writers in memory of the late Carol Tricker, a well-known writer from St Andrews. The tour will begin at Studio 132 in Forfa on Friday, October 17th, followed by a performance at Dibbletree Theatre in Carnoustie on Friday, October the 24th, with a final stop at Abbey Theatre in Arbroath on Friday, November 21st. Neigud is a compelling new play that delves into the intricate relationship between Dylan, a troubled 15-year-old boy, and Tasha McBride, his dedicated guidance teacher. Set primarily in McBride's office, the narrative masterfully explores themes of trust, trauma, and vulnerability. Afternoon Tea for Children's Charity. Legendary former radio host Ali Bally is swapping the airwaves for teapots as he gets set to host a charity afternoon tea in support of the Archie Foundation. The foundation is set to host a glitzy sips and sparkles afternoon tea in Dundee to raise funds for the local children's charity, which supports babies, children and their families across the region. The glamorous event will take place on Saturday, November the 8th at the Apex Hotel Dundee, with guests set to enjoy an afternoon of fun, music, games and raffles. Adding to the atmosphere, Scotland's top vocal harmony trio, the Vintage Girls, will perform timeless hits with their signature vintage twist, transporting guests through the decades. Tickets are £50 per person or a table of eight for £400, which includes an afternoon tea paired with a glass of Prosecco or a non-alcoholic alternative, live entertainment and the chance to win exciting prizes. Scottish fashion retailer Tiger Lily Boutique Brottie Ferry will showcase its glamorous clothing in a fashion show during the event and will also treat one lucky attendee to a personalised shopping experience complete with Prosecco and a £200 voucher to spend. The boutique will also donate 20% of the proceeds from its pop-up shop on the day to support the charity's work. Sandy was wizard in the wet at Donington Park. Forfa driver Sandy Mitchell delivered a masterclass in treacherous conditions to dominate the British GT Championship finale at Donington Park. The 25-year-old from Forfa again partnered Alex Martin in the number 78 Lamborghini Huracan Evo 2 GT3 prepared by Barwell Motorsport. Mitchell, making only his fourth and final outing of this season's seven-weekend championship, topped the timesheets in five of the six sessions. Such was Mitchell's mastery of the conditions that he eventually took the checkered flag 30.945 seconds ahead of the sister Lamborghini. He said, "It's a great way to finish my British GT season. This is the fourth podium with Alex, which is a great return on the six races we've contested this year." Mitchell is in Barcelona this weekend for the final three-hour race of the GT World Challenge Europe powered by AWS, Pro Endurance Cup. Athlete Eilish takes a third win. In a triumphant return to London, Eilish McColgan powered to a record-equalling third Vitality London 10,000 victory. The Carnoustie runner, already the British record holder, clocked 30.35 to record the fastest time over the distance by a British female this year. She finished ahead of Jessica Warner, Judd, the third fastest time in the UK this year, and Alex Bell. The result followed McColgan's third place at the 2025 Great North Run and sharpened her form ahead of her debut at the TCS New York City Marathon on November 2nd. McColgan, who equaled Joe Pavey's record of three wins in this event, said, "I am absolutely buzzing about this result. Running past certain places was really nice and nostalgic, and having so many people cheering you on, it inspires you to do London Marathon as well."
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Liz here from East Kilbride, and I'm ready to start telling you about the wonderful, wonderful, talented Lucille Ball. So where do I begin? Well, if I tell you that in today's wee chat, I'm going to mention Star Trek and Mission Impossible, that will perhaps lead you to think, well, this is worth listening to. Lucille Ball, born in 1911. Now, she had a very, shall we say, varied and difficult childhood. Her father was an engineer for the Bell Telephone Company, and he seems to have been a hard-working and decent man. But sadly, he passed away from typhoid fever when Lucille was only 3 years old. This was a great shock and a trauma for the family. And there began many years where she was sent to difficult and different members of the family. The first crowd of grandparents seemed to have been lovely folk who lived very close to an amusement park, one of these holiday resorts, like the kind of resort that features in the film Dirty Dancing. And here, we, Lucille, saw the dancers and the entertainers and the stage and the vaudeville acts. So who knows what impact that perhaps had on her. But then her mum remarried, and the next set of grandparents were a very, very strict and austere couple. They only allowed one mirror in the house, in case of vanity. And when Lucille was spotted looking at herself, the grandparents were very, very annoyed. She always, it seems, wanted to be a dancer and go on the stage. And although they didn't have much in the way of money, her mum and the grandparents decided, let's give the girl a chance. And she was sent out to a school for dramatic arts in New York. Betty Davis was a pupil there at the same time. It wasn't just to give her a chance to be on the stage, because at the age of 15, our Lucille had started dating, and she was dating a most unsuitable guy called Johnny DeVita, a 21-year-old local hoodlum. So her mum decided, put the girl on the stage and put away all that nonsense. The school did not really nurture her talent. In many ways, they really tried to drain it out of her. But she soldiered on. And that's a key aspect of Lucille Ball's personality. This girl was not an instant success. Many, many years of rejection. Many years of auditions. But she kept going. She dropped the unsuitable boyfriend, by the way. And in these many years, gaining experience and stagecraft, often in the chorus of bigger events, bigger shows, she met some of her lifelong friends who, by the way, were having much more success than her. Among them were Catherine Hepburn and Ginger Rogers. So we're moving into the 1940s now. She's beginning to be respected and, in fact, booked for regular performances, not your top movies. Rather unkindly, she acquired the nickname of the Queen of the B-movies. And then, moving on to the post-war boom years in America, the great innovations are coming in. Radio still has a big hold in family homes, but there's the beginning of TV, as well as the ongoing wish to be a movie star. In the post-war years, our Lucille established herself as a very successful radio artist. And then she met a charismatic, handsome Cuban band leader called Desi Arnaz. She liked him very much. She wanted to be with him very much. And even from their early married years, Desi, shall we say, had an eye for other women. So Lucille, ever the thinker, realised one way of keeping Desi on a short lease would be to have him in her shows. So she had him in the radio shows, and her role was as a zany housewife, and TV came knocking, and she said, well, I'll do it, but Desi needs to play my husband in the TV version as well. The TV executives were rather concerned. Would America in the 1950s accept a married couple of a redhead and a Cuban? In fact, the public loved the Lucy Show, which became a huge phenomenon, really, in these days before the many channels and these days before streaming. I Love Lucy was a hugely successful show year after year, the big attraction on CBS, the zany housewife who landed in all sorts of scrapes, trying to do her best, but not always succeeding very well. During these years, I think perhaps the reality of the marriage was not what the TV audiences saw. But they stuck together, in part, I think, because they both had very good business brains. And they thought, well, what can we do here? Let's do a deal with some of these TV moguls. Let's offer to pay for a better quality 35mm film, which will make our shows look much more glossy, much more successful, and we'll keep the rights to our shows. And of course, when the shows became a huge, huge success, they were making the big money at the time and even more in the future. Because when they bought back the rights, Desi and Lucille gained a huge amount of money. And in that way, they were a very successful partnership financially. Shall we say the marriage was a bit roller coastery? She finally divorced him in 1960. And when that divorce was finalised, she went ahead and bought him out of the share of the TV company. The TV company, the original name, was their two names put together, Desilu Productions. And that became Lucille Ball's very own entertainment company. She was the first woman to head up such an entertainment company, and she had a very good brain for finding talent. And here's where I'm introducing some of these shows. The ideas for both Star Trek, the original motion picture, and Mission Impossible, way many years before Tom Cruise, were put past the woman executive, Lucille Ball. The executives underestimated our Lucille. She saw they had the potential, especially for the younger markets coming in America, and she gave the green light to these two hugely important shows that not only became later cinema franchises, but in many ways set the standard for what could be done in TV. She was adamant everything had to be as good as possible, and she introduced lots of innovations, like having a cinema and a studio audience right there as a show was recorded, which was especially innovative when you thought of TV comedy shows. Going on to her 50s as a woman on her own, she continued to be a very important person in the American media. And then a dark episode. Because in America in the mid-50s, some people in the media were suspected of being communists. The House Un-American Activities Committee unearthed a bit of paper that said that Lucille, as a 24-year-old, had actually hosted a meeting of the Communist Party in her house. She reported to the committee that this was only because she dearly loved her socialist grandfather and had joined the Communist Party at his insistence. Whether this swung it in her favour or not, I think the words of Desi and onto the TV screen probably had an impact. He stepped forward before one of the shows was being recorded and said, "Now look, folks, to settle what our Lucy is about, the only thing red, as in communist, the only thing red about Lucy is her hair. And even that is not legitimate." She continued to be a superstar. In her later years, mixing and attending some of the great Hollywood events, the great Hollywood extravaganzas. In her later life, she appeared on stamps, and her local town decided to make a statue for Lucille. The statue was opened up, and the statue was deemed scary, terrible, dreadful. The council were so shocked, they decided to make another statue. And by the time it was completed, the so-called scary Lucy statue had become quite a tourist attraction. So if you go to Jamestown, New York these days, you can join the many busloads who visit the two statues, which are in the town square, the scary Lucy one, and 25 yards away from it, the one that they think is a much better one. I think perhaps I better end now. I hope I've given you an idea of the wonder, the phenomenon of Lucille Ball. And perhaps I should end with one of her sayings. I hope you like it. Lucille said, "The secret of staying young is to live honestly, eat slowly, and lie about your age." Well, there you are, folks. Lucille Ball, a real force of nature.
TNF Soundings.